Today for Always Record episode 151, we have another great show from the Bizarro Always Record team. Before we get to that, I just want to thank everybody who donated and supported the Indiegogo campaign for the 2016 Olympia Sync Summit project. Obviously, we didn't raise our full goal, but we got enough that it's a great start, and I just really wanted to thank everybody, and as far as giving you guys a heads up, keep tuned to thesyncbook.com/events. I will be posting updates there as I know what's going on. That's about it for me. Thank you again, everyone, so much, so very, very much. And I will now shut up and I'll let you enjoy Always Record 151 with the Bizarro crew. Thanks.
Inches of snow 3 days ago, and now it's already mostly melted, and it'll be gone by the end of the week. So very up and down.
But and you were just at the center of it all, right, with the Iowa caucuses.
clear of most of it. I locked myself in the basement for a week straight, and I survived it. So
is that something that sort of takes over? Are you, like, if you were to go outside, is it everywhere, or is it something that you can kind of,
it's pretty all-consuming. And at one time we were driving from the indoor swimming pool, and we were like, what are all these lines for? There's just people lined up everywhere, and I guess Bernie Sanders was speaking, and like apparently Vampire Weekend was playing for the rally. I don't know. That's just what I heard. That's what my wife told me. So
Vampire Weekend.
I saw that headline in the news.
Yeah, more like Vampire Week, but you know, hey, whatever.
Vampire politics.
Oh my.
I was going to say vampire, period, and then just, no, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Alex Fulton, how are you, mister? You're
doing okay? Doing
coming
okay?
Out of it. Yeah.
Yeah, coming out of the, into the, end of the tunnel.
Dude.
Out of the darkness.
Well, I feel for you. I feel for you on that front.
Yeah. I think it's been a pretty general, something in the air.
Yeah.
This year, it's been really, really crazy.
Absolutely. Well, I think we can get used to that. I think we can. Good times. Months to come, I would imagine.
I'm just gonna go on my happy way and pretend it's not happening.
Exactly.
That Cliff High video really scared the shit out of me.
Yeah, he always scares the shit out of me. Like, this is, I remembered why I stopped doing it as much, because it always makes me feel bad.
Yeah.
But not that he's wrong. I actually really like him, and I don't know. It's just,
I hope he's wrong.
I mean,
he's wrong about a lot.
He has been. Yeah, he has been. But for someone who seems to be wrong a lot, I sure like him. And
very intelligent, very unique in his opinions. Even though he's working with the same sort of material, he kind of puts it all together in a way that's very much his own, which I appreciate. He's not, it's like, you know, if you listen to him, you're not going to hear what you hear everywhere else.
Yeah. But. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I've been at Cliff High, you know, off and on, adherent to his, just videos and things. And particularly when I was in Portland, like I mentioned to you guys, there was a real, I feel like that was an acceleration point or whatever that means, but you know, some kind of node on the timeline was that 2008 moment. Mm-hmm. That was a huge period for me and upheaval and everything, but I was in Portland. And I was following the WebBot and the WebBot reports, and he had, I mean, a year out had picked that October 8th date. I mean, it was something that he was very clear about for like a year. October 8th, or watch it, October 8th. And it was just uncanny how that day was the day. I mean, there was a series of days, but there was a pocket of like a week or two where the stock market just, I mean, lost record amounts, you know, and so he really nailed that one on the head. I've just been disappointed that kind of since that time, the doom and gloom has never come true. I guess I've been happy and relieved, but sort of disappointed in his message. But yeah, he's so easy to watch because he's got this really like nice voice, and he's calm, and he's got this spiritual bent that I really like. He's like into Qi and Qigong. And so I take comfort in like his spiritual sort of clarity. But yeah, it seems like the reports have just been wrong all the way through, you know, ever since that October 10th date. But, anyhow.
Yeah. So what's this thing you dropped in the chat, Dennis?
Well, okay. My friend Talitha Wall, who we've talked about before, now months, like years ago, we talked about this place in particular because, she had an experience where she went in there and felt like the whole place was a front for something else. And she even came to the conclusion that she thought it was some sort of, nodal point that had a, time travel room. And basically the exact same scenario as 11-22-63. And she's had a hypothesis for a long time that, that certain hotels and, even banks or even military bases, places that sit on a location for a really long time, are doing so because they're holding down a particular location where things can happen and things can occur. And, she fingered this place, and she even, like, the people were like, several of the people that were in there, she was, were giving her a really strange, reaction for her being there. And so I don't know, just throwing it out there, but, yeah.
Also, I mean, it's just weird that Street View lets you go into the restaurant.
I know, right? I know. Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah.
It makes me want to just like, analyze what I'm looking at.
What's interesting too, I mean, I don't know how, I mean, whatever, but the building right next to it is a new building, and it's called Chrysalis.
Mm.
And then all the other buildings around in that neighborhood are really historic. And, yeah, I mean, downtown LA is really curious in general. I mean, there's a lot of very new, and very old, so,
that's crazy.
But yeah, I mean, I would love to talk more about 11-22-63 and just what you guys are thinking, but I wanted to throw that out there because it was another one of these occasions where, because Talitha watched the episode as well, and it was another one of these things where we're watching something and we're like, oh my gosh, this is the exact same thing we've been talking about, and it's the premise of a show, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm just looking at these paintings in the restaurant. It's like this weird horned thing.
Yeah, if you do an image search too, you can see some of the other, because they have all these like old time hot dogs, 19 cents.
Yeah, that's just like the diner in the show. They're eating beef from 1960 and charging those prices.
Yeah, that's funny.
I think it's the idea of a 2 minute gap. So like in 11:22:63, you guys know, he can go back into time, but when he returns, only 2 minutes have passed. And it reminds me of the ufology, idea, you know, repeating, happening that people claim that they kind of lose time, lose little bits of time, you know, and they look back and all of a sudden maybe they miss some time. I don't know if it's 2 minutes. I think sometimes the UFO, abductees report maybe a little longer than that. But that's kind of an interesting aspect. And I know we've talked about going into some of the ufology, in this, at least in the emails between us.
Did you guys see if you go into the restaurant as far as you can and then rotate the camera around so that you're looking at the door and then look up over the door, what it says on the ceiling?
No, but I'm doing that right now.
I can't access it right now while I'm in the chat, so you guys are going to have to help me.
I'll let Dennis find it. It's kind of like a...
This is the place. There is no place. There's no place quite like this anywhere near this place, so this must be the place.
Oh.
This is the place. There is no place quite like this place anywhere near this place, so this must be the place.
That's funny.
That's awesome. I want to go to this place now.
Yeah.
I'm also thinking, this is weird how I'm like interpreting the decor of this diner like it's a movie or something, but the red and white striped pillars.
Yeah.
For SJ, I guess you can't see it, but there are these like pillars that are red and white striped, kind of like a barbershop.
Okay.
But it just kind of reminds me of the movie The Phantom Toll Booth, the animated version where it's a kid gets a present, the giant present that is red and white, candy striped, and it turns into a portal to this other dimension. I don't know.
Interesting.
Well, that's funny. The toll booth, I mean, to go to 11:22:63, and this is a recurring theme in a lot of these time travel movies, is the idea of the phone booth as a kind of a portal. And in that scene, he tries to call his father in the show. So he's back in 1960. He picks up the phone. Chris Cooper's character has warned him that if you try to mess with reality too much, then there's going to be some pushback or there might be glitches in his experience back in the past. So he tries to call his father and there's static and he can't really hear his father. But as soon as he walks out of the phone booth, a car nails the phone booth and I guess it kills a woman or something like that. But this idea of that phone booth motif, what's the other one? Back to the Future. Isn't that where they race into the phone booth before the car disappears?
Yeah, it reminded me a lot of David Lynch too, like the what's the one? Not Mulholland Drive, the one with
Blue Velvet.
No, god damn it.
Lost Highway?
Yes, Lost Highway. Yeah.
Well, that was one of my favorite lines in the whole show, is if you try to do something that really fucks with the past will fuck with you. Which, I don't know, I just thought that's from a filmmaking standpoint, is this a really good, well done show? I don't know, I was surprised. I was not expecting it to be as good as it was.
Yeah, there's a lot of writing things that I thought was interesting, that when they're watching the electroshock videos in the class, which is random inclusion, but it's talking about rerouting the circuitry of a diseased brain as one of the lines that you overhear. And then he asks why the filmmakers chose to document these conditions, and it's like, why are the writers writer of this show including this?
Go ahead.
Oh, did you hear me? I
heard you. I thought Esther was going to say something. I'm sorry. I'm distracted because I'm continuing to go further and further into this restaurant on Street View. You can go into the entire place and look around, and you can get a close-up of the thermostat in the back of the room.
Yeah, I did that too. I know. Yeah.
It says 513 degrees at 513. If I wanted to get really crazy, I would say that you've got on the thermostat there a flipped 153, and then the 73. But then there's two little buttons up and down, so it's like 732 right there. But that would just make me really crazy. I just can't think of any reason why this is. Is this just something Google does now? You can go into businesses and look at their thermostats?
Yeah, that, some of the businesses have allowed Google to, it's a new feature, definitely, the Google Street View. So they probably had a deal with Google. And I bet it's, is it a pretty famous diner, Dennis? I mean, is that a...
I didn't even know about it until Talitha brought it up like a while back. So I'm it's not so famous that I had heard of it, but well, I don't know. But it also there is an old timey picture of what the place used to look like on the wall to near the front door, which is kind of curious, interesting to see.
Especially on a time travel. And you know, if we're talking about a time travel theme right away, there you go. You have, you know, technology. I'm just thinking here about technology as a means to time travel. So set aside any kind of fanciful like rabbit hole, notion, though, look, we can go back to that. I mean, that's fascinating and I'm open to it for sure. But, you know, you're time traveling through technology when you take a photograph even, you know, yeah. That rendition now exists after you pass along. So I think that's interesting. And even the phone itself is like a technology that is in a way allows people to travel through space, certainly. And so there's like a almost you're in the same place, two different places at the same time. You know, your voice, like my voice right now exists in Austin, but then also exists out of the city and in Portland at this moment, you know, so it's kind of a splitting that happens with technology. So anyhow, I just think that's interesting that there's that picture there, for sure.
Absolutely.
Magic is technology.
What is?
Oh, magic, as the famous quote goes. Any sufficiently advanced technology would appear as magic. So whatever means that Andrew Basiago uses to time travel, it is going to be a technology.
The chronovisor?
Is that what he used?
That, you said that there was numerous types, but that was the main one, that would construct a digital, or like a hologram of the event in the past, and then they would step into that hologram and be inside of it. Which I actually, my whole thing, like, actually I listened to a couple things of him today just because, I mean, we've been discussing it that he's running for president. So like, which is like, and that he claims he saw, not only did he meet, numerous presidents and claims that as far as President Carter, they were forewarned of their presidency, and in particular, the Bushes and Barack Obama had been known since they were very young, and that he was in social settings with them where they were talking about their future presidencies, and he himself was supposedly told of his potential or his eventual presidency, but Andrew Basiago doesn't know if it's 2016 or 2025. So, but, and he is formally running for president.
Yeah. See, I believe all of that. Not necessarily because he says so, but I believe that something like that is true. I just wonder if he does, or, I mean, I haven't really listened to that stuff, but.
We got a little bit of choppy audio coming, I think, Alex.
From me?
Yeah, I think possibly so.
Dang it.
And you know what? Here's the deal. I believe Andrew as well, though my thing is that I think anytime you step into that hologram, it's a different reality. So he is speaking what is true to him because that was the reality he experienced. And all of these people that were in these jump room programs to Mars, I don't disagree that they were experiencing that. I just think that that's not real. Or it was real to them, but, and this is kind of what, Kurt, insinuated, and he had made a comment that, you know, he made a rightful comment that I am somewhat, bothered by the idea of large sections of the population being moved, and that this, because frankly, we're energy sources for other people. But he made a point that the landscape is, you know, or the map or the landscape is not what we perceive it to be, and that we wouldn't have to move. It could be a virtual reality type move. And I agree with what Kurt said. That was appropriate. And I think this is sort of what's playing out with Basiago. So he thinks he's telling the truth, and I think he is telling the truth, but his truth is based on something that is not real. So.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That would explain why, if he is such a heavy-hitting whistleblower, that he would be allowed to run for president and speak about it all the time. I mean, just the fact that he's on coast to coast and all that automatically makes him a suspect for program.
Yeah, I don't know.
But
it's me trying to make sense of it too. I don't really know, but that's.
No, it makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. TBS. Sorry, I'm obsessed with this diner now. I need to stop looking at it.
Well, is it? It's if you go in it, it's nighttime, but if you come out, it's daytime. Alex, you wrote a number of notes about as you watched 11/22/63. I mean, is there anything on that list that you'd like to?
I think that was SJ.
Or SJ, that's what I meant. Pardon me, SJ. Yeah. I went over my notes here, and we had a lot of similarities, but
you know, nothing. I mean, some of them were just kind of picayune niceties of just little things I noticed. I mean, I think in terms of an overarching like a message about the show, I'm not sure if I had any kind of summation or any kind of flash, you know, big flash that was contained in those notes. I really enjoyed it. I was pleasantly surprised. You know, I saw that I was going to have to sign up for Hulu, and I was like, fuck this. And then Alex kindly mentioned there was a free trial, and so I pushed through, captured the free trial, and watched it, and I don't regret it at all. Now I'm considering joining Hulu until the show's over. That's how good it was. And this isn't, I'm not trying to get like an advertisement to Hulu. I actually researched who owns Hulu. It's a consortium of Fox, AT&T, not Time Warner, AT&T and Comcast. So we're talking about big media companies that are behind Hulu and that are behind this production. I mean, this is not like some upstart Netflix or something like that. I thought that was interesting, just the whole Hulu message. But, you know, man, I mean, for me, I guess one of my big takeaways is like the JFK thing is a huge part of the show, right? And that's always fascinated me growing up I was born in 81, and I was raised in a conspiracy environment. And not in my home necessarily, but just in, you know, around Austin. I don't know if you guys have seen the movie Slacker, but it's filmed in Austin in the late 80s, early 90s. And there's a scene in this bookstore that I grew up going to where they had a whole JFK conspiracy section. And, you know, so anyhow, the point is, it's just this has been part of culture that I've been exposed to my whole life. And so for me, that this is a TV show that's like the plot is someone going into that world that we've all read about and messing with the parts of that world, it's just very compelling to me, the premise. And, you know, I thought it was going to be a whitewash. I think I read somewhere that the book kind of concluded Oswald, and I don't know if this is a spoiler, and I've never read the book, but the fact that the first episode has him following George de Morenschamp, I think that's, I'm not sure you pronounce his name. That's huge. I don't think most people are going to know who he is. I mean, he's kind of a sub-aspect of the JFK conspiracy culture. And so, you know, right there, it's sort of, I think it's an interesting element. I don't know, man. I mean, those are some of my initial thoughts of just that it's huge corporations reappropriating this culture we've been raised in and sort of recasting it sort of to capture our attention. I almost feel like I'm being played a little bit, because, you know, even though it's really entertaining and I'm enjoying it, it's like shit, like they're kind of using this now against me to capture, to get, first of all, to get my $11 a month.
But, look, man, like James Franco grew up in Palo Alto, which is the home of one of the first particle collectors in the U.S. And so, like, I've been entertaining this thing. This is something that I should give proper credit to Talitha, because of the conversation her and I had about him for a long time, and she was the first people pointing out that Palo Alto potential time travel connection because of what she's observed in Palo Alto and her just general weirdness of the area. But so like, here, what if someone was?
We're getting some heavy static. I couldn't really hear. Let's see. It was kind of intermittent, and then it just got heavy there for a moment.
Yeah.
Can you hear that?
Yeah, I hear it. There, it is quieted itself.
Okay. Go ahead. You were saying Talitha had basically pointed out
a Palo Alto oriented stuff in her, I've been kicking around the idea, like, what if they're casting somebody who came from a Bishago type group in James Franco, and the filming of it is actually creating, or maybe like, does the alternative story of a Kennedy assassination affect the storyline of the past? So like, is the show itself a vehicle for screwing with timelines? And I think this is the conclusion that Talitha has come to. And so is the show itself screwing with time? Like, or I guess you could make that case for all TV programs too, though, because maybe it's this sort of,
that's what
yeah,
that's sort of what cryptocubrology is all about. Like, we talked about the whole technology of film and cinema itself.
Exactly, yeah.
Seems it, all of it hidden, like, pattern. And so...
Well, I'm curious what the difference is between film and shooting digital, and, like, how that, like... because maybe there's a difference there.
Yeah, there must be some kind of difference. I think it's always interesting to me that the way Kubrick's life intersects with the technology, in the sense that he dies in 1999, which is the year that Star Wars Episode I is released, which is like the first big foray into digital, purely digital filmmaking. So it's like he dies, and a couple months later that comes out, and it's like this new era begins of digital. And yeah, there is certainly a more immediacy to it, I guess. Obviously, just on a baseline level, there's more steps in technology involved in film. It's more physical. It's closer to the real, I guess, whatever that is. Whereas the digital can be so easily, as we know, in a way, I guess. I don't know. I'm muting. Penny, for your thoughts.
Well, I was just saying, I think the same thing there, Alex, that the digital filmmaker, I was reading an article today about how easily, is the new Pee Wee Herman film, as a condition for his participation, he was going to get to hire his own digital retoucher to make him look younger. So they took away his jowls and they did all kinds of retouching to he's in his 60s. And apparently he looks quite young, like he did when he was doing the show in the 90s, I guess. So, I mean, right away, I think it's easier with digital to do that kind of retouching. I don't think it's as easy to do that at all, with, old style cinema. But, this idea of like stepping into a different reality in the hologram in the 11-22-63 show, the other factor, the feature of the time warp is that anytime you come back, when you step back in, so if you go back into the past, if he were to go back into the portal, everything is reset. Anything he changed on his last trip gets reset, is what I understood.
Yeah.
And so what that means is that, he's had 2 years of experience and then he can come back in with that experience and then go sort of tinker with it again and maybe learn as he goes. But I mean, the metaphor to me is this idea of like the perceiver, right? The individual is perceiving reality. And so as I change the perception, it's just like a classic sort of spiritual new age aphorism, change the perception, change the reality kind of thing. And so to me, it makes total sense that like, they talk about this in like trauma healing, like, you get pictures of your family when you were a kid and sort of talk to your mother and kind of heal the events in your mind as the adult. And that can sort of change your experience in the present moment. And so that's another thing that it's sort of, we're just talking about this notion of like how you can change the past by changing perceptions of the past, you can change the present timeline. And it's just some other examples of that. Oh, and the other thing I wanted to mention was that, did you guys see Vanilla Sky? There's a scene in there where there's a Coltrane hologram playing John Coltrane at a party.
Oh, yeah.
I forgot about it. It's been a long time.
Yeah. It's this other idea of like holograms being part of, Coltrane would be the time traveler in that sense, I think, even though he's not sentient maybe, but I mean, he's there at a different time, or everybody's a time traveler because they're traveling back to see the Coltrane performance. And I guess you could frame it in different ways. I also think this goes to this idea we've talked about before of the flattening of reality by the technology. And, maybe part of that flattening is that it's almost like you enter into a space, this timeless space, where you can sort of choose to time travel if you want by turning on your phone, or you can turn it off and focus on 2016. The external ramifications of that is something that to me is like, what does that mean for how the society is structured? Is it going to be totally torn down, these institutions? Maybe that's what, Cliff High is perceiving in his, things have sort of been rearranged in a lot of ways, and it doesn't have to be like all death and famine or anything. It just may mean that we can sort of time travel and, we're just going to kind of be in reality in a different way. But those are just some of the thoughts I had. Trying to think of what else there was. On the other hand, digital filmmaking and film are very similar in a certain way. I mean, the digital sensor still has to let light in and then capture it and save those files, So there is a similarity that there's a light in reality, that is then being saved on a digital file. So there is some kernel of light reflection.
That makes sense. That brings up a lot. One of the movies we just saw was, Hail Caesar, the new Coen brother.
Oh yeah. I haven't seen
it. Which, I think I sent you guys the trailer when it came out because.
Yeah.
It's like there's like a shadowy group in Hollywood. They call themselves the future and they send a note to the guy that's like, we are from the future. So it's like this explicit kind of time travel motif. In the real movie, they're supposed to be communists, but that's a hard movie to talk about. But I don't know. It starts with the crucifixion. It's about a movie about the crucifixion, and they bring up that very idea about light and capturing light and a world of light and Jesus being the light, etc. And just a minute ago, I was thinking about Philip K. Dick and his ideas about the idea that real time ended with the crucifixion or whatever. And then we've been in this long state of like stasis, at the end of which reality is going to come back or something like that, which is kind of a reversal in my head of how I've perceived things, like thinking like the time before 9/11 was real. And ever since then, it's sort of been increasingly not real, until the point where today in 2016, you have Donald Trump on TV running for president, impersonating Tim Heidecker and being the funniest thing I've seen in a long time, running for president. So it's like, are we in the real time now, or are we in the fake time now? And what was real, we thought was real, was fake. there's some weird reversal going on. I don't know. Does that sound crazy? Or make not make any sense?
Up, man. No, it's straight on. It's straight on. From what I mean, that's the question, right? That's the million-dollar question. What is real? And you know, real quick here, I just wanted to note, you know, this idea of Jesus being the light, right? And if we talk about capturing light, you know, the photograph was invented in the 1840s, I think 1837. They actually have the first photograph right here at the Harry Ransom Center. Every time I go over there, it's an exhibit that's installed permanently. So you have to walk by that little room and you can go and see the first photograph, then walk into the big gallery. And actually, they have a Shakespeare exhibit right now. So I've been looking at the First Folios. I don't know if you're familiar with the Shakespeare conspiracy stuff, but it's all about how the first.
Insane right now.
Yeah, they're on display. They have three copies at this museum. But real quick, anyhow, I don't mean to get sidetracked. My whole point is just that if the technology to capture light was developed in 1840 and it's since just accelerated in its ability to do so, is this the return of Christ in a way where we actually can sort of separate ourselves from Christ and see Christ? Whereas before, light wasn't capturable, and now we've captured it and we sort of give it back to ourselves and view it and interface with this captured light. I mean, to me, this might be the apocalypse, you know, has happened, because it's as an uncovering or a revealing. This is the apocalyptic time. It is the capturing light technology, and Christ has returned, you know, is one way to look at it. And in that sense, you know, 9/11 coincides with the rise of the internet. Maybe we are living, reality has been returned to us. I saw a PKD quote, that same thing. I just read something online, but it was like, he said that there will be like a revealing, PKD believed. And he was like, only at that point will we be able to exist in some kind of true state. I forgot the exact quote, but maybe that's what we're living in. You know, I mean, I'm open to it. This is actually the reality, and Jesus has returned, you know, as crazy as that sounds. You know,
yeah, absolutely. That's the idea, is that he has returned. We're just waiting to see it, I think. What was I just gonna think? I don't know. Keep going. No, I like that. Oh, I was gonna say, you said the first photograph was taken in 1840?
In 1837, when it was I think daguerreotype, which is a way to capture, it's like you basically capture on metal, it's a particular you know, process, photographic process. But yeah, I think it's 1837 or 1838. It's disputed. It was in France, and it's another interesting thing where two people developed the technology at the same time, independent of each other.
Yeah.
And then one of them, they somehow finally something you know, a guy used one of the pieces of technology to get the first photograph. But it goes to this whole other thing we've been talking about. And there's, I feel like there's just so much with just what we've covered, and there's so much with what we've gone through collectively and even within our emails. I'm kind of overwhelmed right now because it's like the UFO stuff, the time travel stuff, the, you know, seeding of technology, the, you know, I mean, it's just kind of overflowing for me right now. So let me just mute to see if you guys can capture some of the, get us grounded again. So.
Well, before I forget, I wanted to just point out one more. It's a shame because I have like a million thoughts about 11-22-63, but I would say that, you know, basically the general thrust of it is the idea of bringing Kennedy back to life, and, which, you know, has, I mean, certainly has, you know, sort of a, Christ-like, revival element. But I also think, but what I immediately thought about was Mark LeClaire.
It's his birthday, by the way.
Is it really? I love you. Sorry.
Happy birthday, Mark.
Yeah.
Happy birthday,
Mark. But he, you know, he did his, in his work, he had, done a, some recapturing of that news headline. And I think about it every time because, the gym that I, go to, there's a magazine rack that has the old magazine that Mark pointed out there. So I think about it every time I walk in, but, of the unknown Kennedy sister found. And so there's so much that could be said about this, but like, yeah, it's bringing them back to life. Like, and you know, or even this, I mean, there is a belief that that one Kennedy didn't even die in the airplane and is going to be coming back into the public sphere, which is like, how archetypal is that? Like, that's just insane. In terms of what we've already said here, but,
that's the, that's the Miles Mathis take too.
I've never heard that. Could some of you guys, when you guys just summarize that theory? Because that's the first time I've ever heard that our JFK Jr. is going to be coming back to life, and that's kind of, what the quick summary? I mean,
you know, I don't really remember it completely off the top of my head, but Alex, do you remember?
I mean, I think that's basically it. I know it from the Miles Mathis.
The plane crash was faked or something.
Everything is fake now, but. Yeah, Miles Mathis' take is that John F. Kennedy himself did not die. He faked his own death and like sort of went, he did so to so he could rule from the underground, in the underground bases or whatever. And so naturally his son did the same thing, and at some point they're gonna return to, their throne or whatever. I don't know.
To make America great again?
Yes. But I was gonna say that the show, with regards to the show and bringing Kennedy back, it kind of gives away the game in the very beginning when he says that line that I quoted, if you do something that fucks with the past too much, then the past will fuck with you. So what happens when you try to stop Kennedy from getting killed? It's not going to happen. It's like, it seems like that's what's, I mean, obviously we could just go read the book and find out where it goes, but
ultimately, James Franco's character is like, who makes these rules?
Yeah. Good question.
Yeah. Well, I just want to say it is February 17th, and I find that it's Mark LeClaire's birthday. It's just an interesting, you know, his whole 17 Penrose tiling. So just a connection there.
Yeah.
I, before we got on the talk, I looked at the date. I was like, 217. That just feels kind of eerie to me. And then to hear it's his birthday, it's like, boom, there it is.
Yeah. It is very odd. He was, well, I don't want to give away his personal information. But I've done lots of, basically cubrological analyses of birthdays of myself and other people, and it's weird stuff in there. But I don't want to. Someone who has retreated from the public eye should probably be talked about personally.
Understood.
Well, I just want to say another part of my notes on the show. And Dennis, feel free. Let's talk about 11-22-63 as long as any of us want to, because, I mean, it seems like it's a really good jumping off place. But in the show, the diner has been open for 35 years. The show is released in 2016, February 2016, or 2016. So 35 years before is February 81. I was born in March 81. So that was kind of a personal sync I had with the show. And then the guy's name is Amberson. My name's Anderson. And so I just kind of, it was kind of a weird, you know, I guess not too heavily of a connection, but I just, and then the odds on that fight was 35-1.
Yeah.
When he bets on a fight and wins because he has access to the betting odds. So I just, this number 35, it's a multiple of seven.
JFK was the 35th president.
Okay.
And, 35 years is 420 months. So there's that. It's just amazing how the calendar and our, instruments for measuring time are just have this, I don't know what you would call it, thing running through them where they all kind of, like, 35 years is 420 months, and with regard to 153, it's the fact that in any five consecutive months, not including February, there are 153 days. So you go from one month to another, five in a row, not including February, and it's always 153 days.
Now, hey, this is perfect segue. Do you guys think, because the nature of that Kanye story being $53 million in debt is bullshit, but and then asking Zuckerberg for $1 billion, like, this whole story reads like a cipher for numbers rather than any sort of thing that is real. And it felt like some sort of conjuring, or I don't know, but it.
Yeah. Two guys who are probably what we would call time travelers broadcasting this signal.
Yeah. And getting an insane amount of attention for it. I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then I sent you that little bit, like with Kanye. He was born in 77. And I just have to keep reminding myself that I am among friends. I can say what I want without something crazy.
Go there, please.
Absolutely, man.
Well, it's just this thing that I... So Barry Lyndon, the movie Barry Lyndon, is the sort of the midpoint of Kubrick's career. It's like it's in the middle of, you know, chronologically, of the 12 movies that he made, not including Spartacus. And it's also the longest, so it's sort of like the keystone of the Matrix in a way. And so I use that date that it was released to measure against various things, December 18th, 75. And so I did it with Kanye just because he was born around there, and I found that he was born, it was what, 1 year, 5 months and 3 weeks, which is a 1-5-3 interval, which is just like another one of these things, you know. It's just, it's like I have this feeling he's in the news with a 1-5-3 sync. I look up his date measured to a Kubrick, important Kubrick date, 1-5-3 sync.
Yeah.
And it keeps going.
So great. Yeah.
He's
older than I thought. I didn't know he was that old.
He's been around a while.
I guess I've been around for a while.
You're a 70s birthday, right, Dennis? I mean,
yeah, but when, while watching 11, 2263, like, James Franco's character is bitching about, like, having to go back in there for 3 years. And I'm like, what the hell, man? I've been on the planet for 38 years. Like, that's, like, way longer than 3 years, dude. Why are you complaining?
Well, he goes in there, and then he loses that time, right? So he'll come back 3 years older. Which, you know, that'd be a little scary.
Yeah. Oh, you know, also as a device, I think it's a little bit strange that they do those flashbacks where it's the time that Al was telling him things about what to do. Like, it's a little disjunctive, and I found that to be a little bit... Did anybody have a problem with that? Like, I know that's sort of just, like, a very straightforward...
I liked it because I was sad when Chris Cooper died, and I was like, I hope we don't lose Chris Cooper for the rest of this thing, because I loved his character so much, and I was just kind of happy that they kept flashing back to, like, him schooling Franco's character. I didn't personally mind it.
Yeah, okay.
I like it too, because it's a plot device. Like, we don't even know what all he told him, so we're gonna meted out to us.
That's
I think.
Yeah.
What if he told him something like some tripped out, you know, and there's where the alien Roswell, you know, I mean, we just have no idea, you know.
Well, and you were pointing this out earlier, but SJ, but it reminded me of that Tom Cruise movie where he like wakes up and redoes the day, a very Groundhog Day sort of with the Emily Blunt movie, whatever that was.
Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah. I like that movie, but.
I love that movie.
I haven't seen it.
That's good.
Well, real quick, this back to the Shakespeare cipher. I just listened to a podcast from this guy, Peter. I can't pronounce his last name, but he's Amundsen. Yeah, he's a Norwegian Shakespeare cipher expert. But the number 53 is very important in his cipher, and it was apparently a Rosicrucian number.
Yeah, you pointed that out in an email. I hadn't heard that before. That's interesting.
I'm pretty sure I sent that to you guys a long time ago when I heard him on the Forum Borealis, and yeah, you're right.
Okay. Yeah, I listened to that on the Forum Borealis. That's where I listened to.
Yeah, yeah. There's a whole 4-part documentary that you can watch about him, which is really good. Goes into a lot more detail because it's so visual. A lot of his ciphers are visual. You can't really totally appreciate them until you kind of see them on the page, and it's pretty much incontrovertible to me that what he's found is in fact there.
Well, hasn't the Caesar's Messiah guy talked about that at will? Hasn't he talked about that? And Shakespeare, well, or is that the Shakespeare was a woman theory that...
Here's this about Titus Andronicus, the play Titus Andronicus, and he uses Titus, and he says they rewrote the Jesus story as the Titus Andronicus play as a sort of a way to mock, I think, just Christianity or something. But to him, the fact that they rewrote Titus to kind of blow the whistle on the fact that the Jesus myth was written by Josephus.
Yeah.
But Titus is somehow tied into that it's like a way they invert the Christ story. I haven't even read Titus Andronicus, but basically there's like, I guess Titus is Jesus, and then his son gets killed, and there's this whole thing. But it's about that. I think, just real quick on the Kanye thing, is that this number 53 is very important. And so let's just take Peter Omniscience's theory on its face. There was kind of a network of Rosicrucian writers in Elizabethan England. They wrote Shakespeare as a way to, as a treasure map, is this theory. They were using the number 53. And so what if that organization or an organization like it is still extant, and Kanye and Zuckerberg are, you know, if there are candidates for membership, I mean, they'd probably be good candidates. I'm not saying that they are members or that organization even exists, but let's assume it does. You know, it seems like announcing 53 like this, to me, that could be part of maybe what's being communicated. Anyhow, I'm totally conjecturing.
Or a deal between, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking
Yeah, because okay. I'm not to be a dick, but I really don't. I'm very suspicious on Zuckerberg being. Well, actually, I don't know the intention of any of these groups, so whatever. But yeah,
it's probably more like they're puppets. You know, they're being.
Yeah.
Sort of. Well, used.
Taylor Swift is used in that same capacity as a message is being sent. And, well, you guys have probably heard that stuff too, but I don't.
I was just thinking of the. The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy classic, the classic 42 joke in there,
yeah,
which I'm sure you guys know. But the fact of it being, so they build a computer to answer the question, the meaning of life, to tell them what they don't know. And then it becomes this sort of passing down through time, the responsibility of keeping watch on the computer and waiting for it to come back into alive or awake to give them the answer, and it's like 2,000 years or whatever before it does. And so it basically there's like this a sort of a secret society passing knowledge through time, and then and then the computer wakes up and says, I have to build a computer.
Yeah.
And stronger than me to give you the answer. And so it does that, and then they pass it on for another 2,000 years or whatever. And then the computer wakes up, and they say, so what's the meaning of life? And he says, 42. It's just so perfect. But, okay, so you're talking about the Rosicrucians, and they're obviously a secret society, possibly still extant. I love that word. and if they are broadcasting these, and these numbers are important to them, 53, and I believe 42 is also involved in Amundsen's analysis. There's some line in the folio that's like, I don't remember, but it's 4 and 2. That's the key line. And then 53. And then there's, when he gets to Oak Island, or somebody did, on Oak Island, they found the place, and they dug deeply, and at 153 feet, they found a scrap of parchment that was, like, from the time, the appropriate time of when the manuscripts would have been written. So that number, again, being specifically broadcasted, so it's like secret societies broadcasting numbers, important numbers, for some reason. It's very interesting.
And it reminds me of the stock market. We're going back to the cliff high and the October 8th stock market crash. The low on the S&P 500 of that whole down cycle was 666.
Really?
And so, I mean, that's, you know, again, you've got computers trading, you've got the plunge protection team coming in whenever they need to. I mean, I think there's a case to be made that there may have been a choice there and a communication by that by setting the low as that number. Oh, real quick too, the prime factorization of 42 is 7 times 3 squared. And so, that's not the prime factorization. It's 7 times 3 times 2. And so that's a 237.
Yeah.
I think we probably talked about that. Anyhow. I just was thinking about that.
Oh, and SJ, you had another comment about 53 related to the Giza Plateau or the angle of the what was that?
Yeah, the second largest pyramid on the Giza Plateau. It's Khafre, I think. I think is how you pronounce that, or that's my butchered pronunciation. But it's the second largest plateau pyramid, and it's got an angle, a base angle of 53.05 degrees, I think. That's a rough approximation, 53 degrees. And so it comes up there as well. Yeah.
It's interesting, you know, if you're considering angles of light, again, I don't know. That's, yeah.
Well, and I just wanted to say here real quick, too, like this idea of, to me, this also goes back to this notion of like intentionality versus just a reflection of the consciousness. And, you know, I'm open to this idea that like, I mean, I think there are definitely groups with intentionality doing things like communicating through these numbers in the media. That certainly to me is highly plausible, especially when you have $1 trillion in your bank account. I mean, what else, you know, I mean, that it would just be like us, we'd be having this conversation saying, so what do you want to communicate to each other? You know, it would almost be like fun and games, you know, I own Comcast. I'll send you a little note, Dennis. Look for it, you know, ha ha ha. You know, I think there's also this element, and this is something I wanted to address, of along the lines of ufology, astrotheology, and even synchronicity, is this idea that the consciousness of the perceiver, like, you know, consciousness itself is housed in this physical body. And, we may be, what we actually see on the outside of the body through the consciousness may just be a kind of an inner reflection.
Absolutely.
And, you know, so things like aliens, I mean, this was partially the Jungian theory. I know he believed that there was actual alien ships, but he also thought a big part of it was this kind of inner consciousness that maybe something was happening to the collective unconscious to where now we were perceiving these entities. There was that Michael Tsarian article or Tsarian I sent you guys, but that's why I sent it, because he makes that point about how the zodiac itself is really just a reflection of our bodies.
Yes.
And so, I mean, and who else? Oh, I was listening to, another person discussing, anyhow, I can't remember now, but I think you know, where the inner projection, ends and sort of this subject object, a subject perceiving a objective, a objectified object, you know, begins. You know, I'm just not sure. I think it's a mystery, you know, and maybe the 53 is important for any other number of reasons, like the number of muscles. And you know, I don't know the answer to that, but maybe there's another basis for why these numbers are so important. Maybe that gives them their power. It's sort of like the tarot, number 14. You can go, oh, 1122 right there. 11, 22 trumps in the tarot. Boom. You know, 11 Sephira in the tree of life. Boom. You know, I mean, so, I found that curious, the number 1111, that kind of number that the New Age, I perceived it all the time, I kind of still do, but that's the tarot for you. So anyhow, I'm kind of going off a lot of different topics there, but just this idea of where does the perception projection end and the sort of intentionality and the perceiver of a sort of a separated object begin, you know, where are the lines of self? Like, where does the self end and reality begin? So anyhow.
The square root of 153 is 12.369, which is the exact number of full moons in 1 year. So
is that 12.369 and no other decimals, or is there a lot?
Well, there's a whole bunch of decimals, but it reduces to 12.369, which is like either exact or very close to the number of full moons in a year, like between 12 and 13. Just another fascinating little tidbit, but I love what you're talking about, SJ. That is the $64,000 question, as Joseph Farrell would say. What is the line being drawn? Hold on, my light. Give me a second. I'll be right back. Sorry.
Dennis?
Yes.
You're there.
Damn, sorry.
So you watched it a second time.
Did you
notice anything different the second time? Did it?
Well, I just sort of got spacey about certain things that are said, where there's a part where, Franco is like, it doesn't make any sense. And then the Al character is, he's back.
Sorry.
Jake, the way the world now doesn't make any sense. You know how to think, don't you? I just think that it's really interesting okay, so what he's saying is that nothing, okay, but what the reality that they're in doesn't make any sense, and the reality he's experienced, they're debasing a perception of reality, and then he draws it back to mind comprehension of it. So by saying, you know how to think. So it's like, your mind being the only thing that can, then intuit what's real, which I think is really dangerous. This whole line just bothered. I mean, it was both fascinating and potentially like, well, it's just reminded me so much of the Basiago thing, because like, if you tear down everybody's perception or collective perception of reality, you can install anything in its place as a potential reality. This is a sort of an MKUltra type thing. What they do to break people down, and you know, that just that line really evoked that for me. So that was one of the things I got it the second time around, which is probably overthinking the line, but again, we're amongst friends, so
there is no overthinking.
Well, and real quick, I was thinking earlier when those kids, and that was in my email, this character that's played by James Franco is a English, looks like a high school English teacher, but then he teaches night classes, creative writing classes for adults. That's his character. And then this scene where he's in, I guess, his high school classroom, he's showing his students, and it's unclear if he's an English teacher. I'm just assuming that, but it looks like he could be history.
It's a Stephen
maybe.
King character, so he's definitely an English teacher.
Okay, so he's an English teacher, but that's where he has this TV program, and it's very strange, because this scene is, I mean, this is, now that I think about it, I'm just thinking, how strange is this scene where on the TV are these tortured mutants, you know, mutated human beings. I mean, in like a, it's like an old file footage of some kind of torture of mutated human beings. And then he says, and on the board is written Lovecraft in another scene. But then he tells his students, these people deserve love too. I mean, it's like, it's just very strange. Like, what's the context? Were they being tortured? Were they some kind of a medical manipulation experiments? Is it kind of like you give the victims love? We need to like tell the stories of the exploited. I mean, it's just a little weird, and I suspect we may see something more related to that theme as the, what is it, 8 shows? That's my suspicion. But, you know, you're talking about MKUltra, Dennis, and I think there is a tip of the hat to some kind of MKUltra or a Joseph Mengele-style human experiment. Yeah. That's what I saw on the screen. I don't know what you guys saw. What did you think that was being shown on those TVs?
Yeah, it was.
Did you guys?
I mean, it was definitely medical experimentation. It seemed that way. Of people who are
electroshock type
shock. Yeah, just deviant citizens being reprogrammed or whatever, physically or mentally. Real quick, I wanted to mention that the Chris Cooper character's name is Al, who owns the diner. Al being not only the name for God, but looking like AI, you know, on the page, because an L and an I are the same shape, basically. So it's like he's being directed by the AI, Al.
Well, I couldn't agree more, because I think that aligns with my interpretation, or what I was thinking about as with that, what he's trying to, it's like he's trying to force it. He's trying to force him into doing this trip, you know? And, yeah.
Well, the Quantum Leap, the famous show Quantum Leap, Al is the kind of time traveling assistant.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's it. I mean, that's what I, just there thinking now you mentioned that, you know, the other thing real quick here, we had in some of our emails talked about doing a show on Agent Chris Cooper, and we are initially wanted to talk about, I guess, Agent Chris Carter.
I know every time Alex mentions that guy's real name, I think of that. So, and then Chris Carter. So it's like, or what is the X-Files creator's name is Chris Carter, correct?
Chris Carter.
Okay. Which Chris, now we have, probably get into. We should probably blab about that.
I don't want to, I mean, there's so much here too. I'm thinking, as soon as I saw Chris Cooper, I thought Agent Chris Cooper Carter. It just seems like it's this kind of show idea Alex had. It almost, and sort of expanded on itself. right? Because then we all watch 11/22/63. You have the Chris Cooper character. You have the 1947 year comes out because the James Franco character, the fake ID that Chris Cooper makes for him in 1960 and brings back to give him before he jumps back into the time, the rabbit hole, the fake ID has the birthday of Jake Umnison's character, who is James Franco, as 9/21/1924. But 9/21 is Stephen King's birthday in the year 1947. Mm. And so, we had talked about the agent Chris Carter, that the agent, both of the shows X-Files and what is it, Agent Carter?
Mm-hmm.
They begin their, I guess there's a, I know X-Files begins with a flashback to 47, and I guess Agent Carter has some scenes in 1947.
Yeah, it's all set in 1947.
So this idea, and then I looked up the 1947 year, on just Wikipedia. I mean, and it's just some profound, powerful things that happened there. But the fact that King was born to me is like, seems like a portal was open and they let a bunch of people through that were going to really revolutionize reality on planet.
You know who else was born in 47?
David Bowie. Oh, right?
Yeah, you got it.
And the other thing about, I mean, just a few quick things. Aleister Crowley dies in 47. Let's see. Israel was decided. The UN has the partition resolution in 1947. So you have the creation of Israel. Let's see. The NSA and basically the modern national security state, including the CIA, was created in 1947. The first UFO sightings were in 1947.
Roswell happened in 1947.
Yeah. Roswell, I mean, 47.
It was quite interesting because Roswell happens on July 8th, 1947. And then on July 26, 1947, a couple weeks later, which is also Kubrick's birthday, the CIA, the National Security Act is signed, which effectively creates the CIA, NSA, and the National Security State as we know it, on Kubrick's birthday, 2 weeks after Roswell. So.
Well, and then the other big one is the Beatles, the Sgt. Pepper album. 20 years ago today, Sgt. Pepper taught the band to play. And 20 years ago from the release date is of Sgt. Pepper is 1947.
Yeah.
And that's in the Wikipedia too. I mean, someone that from the Sync book went into Wikipedia. But
we're talking about, so we have Agent Carter, Chris Carter of the X-Files, Agent Chris Carter, but then we have Chris Cooper playing Al Templeton in 11/22, the time traveler. And then pretty soon we're going to get Agent Cooper back in Twin Peaks. And so that name Cooper keeps reoccurring.
Go ahead.
No, don't go. I mean,
but we have the agent as well. So you have Agent Carter. That connects all three of the words. Agent, Chris, Carter, and Cooper are all connected amalgams of each other. And those. I mean, that's insane.
Yep, yep. And then you got, and it's AC too, so that's Aleister Crowley. If you want to go there. And his name is Al, he's playing Al. Lieber Al. Al Templeton. Temple. It's a whole weird.
Oh man, that's mind blowing. I mean, that just right there is kind of like a lightning flash for me. There's just too many connections to want to kind of turn the other way.
You'd think there's some kind of working happening. It's sometimes you just gotta stop talking and kind of just ponder it for a minute. I want a shot of redemption. Don't want to end up a cartoon in a cartoon graveyard. Bone digger, dogs.
for months away from me, you know. I don't find this stuff amusing anymore. If you'll be my bodyguard, I can be your long lost pal. I can call you Betty, Betty, when you call me, you can call me Al. A man walks down the street, he says, why am I short of attention? Got a short little span of attention, and oh, my nights are so long. Where's my wife and family? What if I die here? Who'll be my role model now that my role model is gone, gone? He ducked back down the alley with some roly-poly little bat-faced girl. All along, along, there were incidents and accidents. There were hints and allegations. If you'll be my bodyguard, I can be your long-lost pal. I can call you Daddy. Spinning.